I'm Jim Andrews, a speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Mary Andrews, a couple and family therapist.
Together, we've taught counseling and communicative disorders classes at Northern Illinois University, Portland State University, and in a number of workshops throughout the United States and Canada. This podcast is the first of several. It comes from Portland State University and will be used in the counseling class for speech-language pathology students at Portland State. Our intention is to make several short podcasts to supplement that course and for anyone else interested in improving their professional skills.
Respectful listening is the title of this first podcast. We're going to focus on basic listening skills.
Listening sounds like something that's really easy to do, but for me it's deceptively difficult. It's an active process and requires sustained attention. I can begin with the best of listening intentions, and before I know it, I'm thinking about something else, like what I'll do when the session is over, what other things have to be taken care of today, or something really important, like what we'll have for dinner. Becoming aware, however, that my mind does tend to wander helps me remember to focus on the speaker rather than on myself.
As you listen to this podcast, you may be thinking, now wait a minute, there's lots more to a clinical conversation than simply listening. And of course, you are correct. However, in Jim's and my professional lives and in our personal lives, we've learned that respectful listening is basic to all successful human interaction, and also that it's a very challenging skill to master.
So let's talk about some of the characteristics of effective listening. Lots of characteristics have been described in the literature, but we've selected four that stand out for me as a speech-language pathologist.
The first is curiosity. As we listen to other people and have no preconceived assumptions about what or how that person should share their ideas or express their feelings, we become increasingly curious and interested in what is being shared, almost like an ethnographic interviewer. And this helps us to be more comfortable with people of different cultures, different ethnic origins, as well as with people who are similar to us.
A second characteristic is listening non-judgmentally. Carl Rogers, the founder of Rogerian Listening, called this listening with unconditional positive regard. When we do this, I think it frees the speaker to think seriously about what he or she really believes and what he or she is really thinking.
A third characteristic is to keep the conversation focused on the client. The way that I do this is that I pay close attention to the client's body language, how they might be expressing their feelings, their facial expressions, as well as to what they say verbally.
Finally, it works better for me and seems less intrusive when I don't ask a lot of questions when I'm trying to learn something about the client's situation. Rather, I tend to introduce topics with a statement rather than a question. Later on in the interview, it will likely become necessary to ask questions, but when learning about their situation, I like to try to avoid questions or use very few. We're going to do a role play now, and we'll attempt to use these characteristics as we do this counseling and listening role play. Mary will play the role of the clinician in the role play, and I'll be the father of a 3-year-old child that we'll call Jacob.
Now, all of the role plays that we're going to do in this first podcast are examples taken from a first interview with a parent of a young child. So these listening techniques may change and be used differently as the clinical experience progresses, but this will be be examples from a first interview. And so now I'm the clinician, and you are the father.
I'm the father.
Welcome. I'm pleased to meet you. Tell me about Jacob.
Well, you know, he just turned 3, and he's just an active, playful little boy, curious about lots of things, gets into things. He's a lot of fun to play with. We have a really good time playing together. Both his mother and I enjoy playing with him, reading books to him. But he just isn't using words. And he's 3 years old now, and it seems like he should be using words.
Well, your Jacob is a wonderful little boy, and you really enjoy him a lot. You enjoy playing with him and being with him. But now that he's 3 years old, you're beginning to be concerned because he's not using words.
Right. I hear other children that he plays with. I hear the other children talking, and they just start jabbering all the time. And Jacob isn't, he's making some noises, making animal noises, for example, but he never says words.
So right now you become especially concerned as you observe him with other children and notice that those other children are using a lot more words, using words when he isn't. And then what you've noticed he does is make different kinds of sounds, but they're not words that you can understand.
Right. I think that's when we first really started to think seriously about this, when we heard other children talking so much. So we started to notice what he was doing, and he makes sounds as he plays with toys. He has a toy airplane, and he makes the sound of an airplane. When they play with, and we play with him with little puppets, he makes the sounds of a dog. He can imitate, he can do barking. Mm-hmm. He makes tiger or lion noises, and mm-hmm. he does that when he and I like to wrestle together on the floor, and when we're doing that, I kind of grunt and groan, and he does the same thing. So his voice works, he just doesn't seem to be able to use words.
And so you've noticed lots of ways that he expresses himself with his voice, and he seems to connect those sounds to specific events or animals or pictures. He knows that certain sounds for him go with certain things, but he's not using words to name those, and that concerns you.
Right. It concerns us more all the time, it seems like. Because, as I said, all children, three, are supposed to be talking. He can even point to things. I mean, he points when we look at books with him. If we name the picture, he'll point to it. So mm-hmm. I think he's understanding what we're saying.
So you've noticed a lot of ways that he shows you that he understands what you're saying, but you're really concerned about his not using words, and that's why you're here today. You would like to be able to work on that with me.
Exactly. We'll do whatever you think is necessary. We can do things at home, we'd be happy to.
All right. Well, I would like to work with you, and as we work together, I'm sure that we'll be able to find some ways to help him.
Okay, great.
All right. Now, during that role play, I hope that what I did was to just rephrase or clarify what the father told me. I didn't ask any questions until the very end, when it felt like it was time to ask him if what he wanted to do was to work with me to help his child.
And just telling you about my child, I tried to get in the role of being a father mm-hmm. of a child who wasn't talking. So it helped me just solidify in my own mind what his strengths and weaknesses are, that he's not talking, but he does do other things. And so your listening helped me think of those things.
Well, that's what Carl Rogers said a long time ago, that when a person uses respectful listening with the person that is being listened to will begin to get new ideas, mm-hmm. him or herself, mm-hmm. as part of the process.
I think it works. Now let's mention a few barriers to effective listening. So we'll mention a barrier, and then we'll do a very brief role play in which we use the barrier. And in each case, I'll be the therapist now, and Mary's going to be Jacob's father.
No, his mother.
His mother. Yes, you'll be his mother.
Okay, the first barrier that we're going to role play and then discuss briefly is ask an irrelevant question.
So let's talk about Jacob. Tell me about him.
He's a wonderful little boy, and I really enjoy him. But just like my partner said, I'm just so worried right now because he's three and his little friends are going to preschool and he needs to be starting preschool. And I just can't imagine what that will be like for him, not being able to use words. And I'm terrified of what will happen to my poor child in this different environment.
Mm-hmm. What was your pregnancy like?
Okay, I guess. All right, so you would never do that like this. But that's an example of asking an irrelevant question. We think that the reason people ask questions like that might be, first of all, because they're uncomfortable with what has been said and they want to change the topic, or that as professionals we want to change the direction of the conversation, or maybe just a loss of focus. Maybe Jim was thinking about what he wants for dinner instead of paying attention to what I'm telling him. The second barrier is talking about ourselves and our own experiences, which is called self-disclosure.
So we'll pick up the role play here. You're really concerned about Jacob.
Oh, yeah, and especially when I think about preschool, I don't know how we're going to do this. I work full-time, and I know we're supposed to visit a lot of preschools, and I don't know how I'm going to be able to do that. And I'm just really, really concerned about finding the right place for him, if he's to go to preschool at all.
Yeah, I know just how you feel, because my wife and I had that same situation. Our child talked okay, but we didn't know if we should send him to preschool or if we should keep him home. And my wife kind of wanted to go back to work. And that was a big problem for us, too.
Uh-huh. Self-disclosure is almost always inappropriate in a clinical situation, particularly when you're getting to know a person. And even after you've connected with that person, it should be used very judiciously. Clients don't really want to know about us. They're concerned about themselves. And the third barrier is to give advice too early.
Okay, back to the role play. You're pretty concerned about school for Jacob.
Oh, very. I'm just on pins and needles about that.
Yes.
Because he can't talk. You know, he can't even say, "I want a drink of water," and he needs to be able to talk to go to preschool.
Yeah. Well, you know, for some children, it helps if when you're looking at books, if you would speak slowly, name the picture slowly, and exaggerate the consonants a little bit, just exaggerate the sound so that it allows him to hear those sounds a little better and maybe encourages him.
Oh, that doesn't work. I've already tried that, and it just doesn't work.
Oh, okay. Now, that's a good example of giving advice too soon. It may be that later that would be something we would want to suggest. But now I've already wasted that good idea, and I can't really give it again because she's already told me it doesn't work. So, using an idea before it's time.
Finally, we are going to do another role play. Jim will continue to be the clinician, and I will be Jacob's mother. And he's going to begin with one of our favorite opening questions to families after we've gotten to know them a bit, which is, what have you already done to help? And you're going to do this with all the appropriate listening skills, right?
I hope so.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that you've already done to help Jacob. I'm curious about what you might have done at home in order to help him.
Huh. Well, you know, I try to read to him because everybody tells me you should read to your children. And so every evening I read a couple of books to him. And in fact, he'll often go get the book and bring it to me. And I know he understands because if I say, you know, there's a ball, he points to the ball, or he turns the page when we've finished one of the pages of a little story. And I just know that it's all sinking in and he understands it, but I don't ever hear him say ball or say kitty or whatever the object is.
Yeah, his act of participation helps you know that he's really with you in this, and he's understanding what's happening. He brings the book to you and seems to enjoy looking at the book with you. He turns the pages, he points to the pictures. So he's really involved, but he still, even though he points and seems to understand, just doesn't say the words.
Right, right. And he likes to cuddle up. I mean, sometimes I've worried about all the horrible things that might be wrong with him, but he likes to cuddle up and be close and be with me. And then there's another thing that I never thought of before, but maybe this is helpful. I sometimes will give him choices, like if he wants water or milk, and I'll say, which do you want, water or milk? And he'll make a sound, but I can't tell what he's saying. But then if I go to the refrigerator and open the door, he'll point to what he wants, and then I give it to him. So that doesn't that seem like he understands?
And it does. It sounds like he's understanding what you're saying, and what you're doing is naming things for him. You're saying it slowly, it sounds like, and real precisely. And he remembers when you've given him a choice, and then you ask him if he wants water or milk, and then he remembers that. You open the door, and he points to the one that he wants.
Yeah, so those are all good things, but it still doesn't take the place for really using words. And so that's what my partner and I would really like some help with.
Right. You've already done some things at home. You've named, you look at books with him. You name the pictures. You give him choices. And it still hasn't worked to encourage him to talk.
Okay, yeah, I like you, Mr. Clinician.
Thank you. That's because I use all the characteristics of good listening.
All right, okay. So then we're coming now to the end of our podcast, and we want to make a suggestion, and that suggestion is that you try practicing some of these listening skills. Try practicing clarifying, rephrasing, using the characteristic of a good listener. Try it with a friend, a child, a partner, a colleague, somebody who is expressing. It works best to try it first if they're expressing discomfort or unhappiness about something, because then you can be in a position to respond generously to that.
Our next podcast is about challenges associated with respectful listening. Second, the main points of this presentation are summarized in writing and are available for printing out. And finally, if you'd like to contact us, our email address is jmandrews, F as in Frank, B as in boy, T as in Tom, @earthlink.net.